There are so many questions swirling around about the topic of Brexit. The other thing you have to face now is how will it affect us practically in terms of trade, travel and, of course, food? Well, a woman who's been eating and drinking Brexit, so to speak, is Tara McCarthy, who's CEO of Bord Beer, and she's with me now in studio. Before we get on to Brexit, you're just back from China, I gather, and there's a government push on there to get people to drink milk.
Absolutely. It's an exciting business, Marion. Good morning.
I thought that there was a digestive problem with Japanese and Chinese on milk.
There is a degree of lactose intolerance out there. You're absolutely right. But all the more reason then for them to look constructively at how can they get people more used to dairy. And they have an ambition now that every person in China should drink a glass of milk a day. And obviously that means there's a huge consumption opportunity out there as well. So from a Bord Beer perspective, we look at that as a new market and a fantastic opportunity with a significant volume of people.
And why would they want people to consume dairy products in particular? Well, milk in particular.
From a health perspective, so they're looking to grow tall, to grow in stature, and they look at the examples of Europe and they look at the world around them and they feel that that will be a contributor to the healthy diets that their consumers will take.
Well, it's a long way to go to get a glass of milk. And when you go on these tours, how do they work? What happens?
Well, there's a context to all of this. So if you look at the food industry, we're a global industry, Marion. We export to 180 different countries around the world. But clear within that, not every one of those countries presents the same opportunity. So what we're looking at is, where is the best bang for our buck when we go anywhere? So together with the Department of Agriculture last year, and very particularly in the context of Brexit as well, when you're looking at diversification, we've created a toolkit that says, and that helps us decide where are the best markets for different products. So the best market for new growth in beef may be different from the best market for new growth in dairy or for prepared foods, etc. So we're looking at where that will happen. And what we've looked at, particularly in our trips last week, where we were in Indonesia, Malaysia, and then continued on to China. So Minister Creed would have led a trade mission out there. And there's an awful lot of work that happens before you land in any of these markets. So first of all, you look at what's the opportunity. Our toolkit would have identified that Indonesia, Malaysia, huge populations, particularly Indonesia, over 260 million people, a growing middle class, growing affluence as a result of that, growing consumption and dairy deficit. They don't have enough dairy for themselves. So we look at that as an opportunity from an Ireland perspective.
I mean, maybe this is old bias or something, but I mean, we're reared on milk and butter and cheese and all of that kind of thing. But were we not always told that they had a healthier diet?
You were told more recently that they would have a very healthy diet in the East in Asia. And that's probably because of a very varied diet that they have over there. Great consumption of seafood, great consumption of vegetables and a little of a lot. We would then be looking at the calorie intake that's happening in Europe and particularly Ireland, UK, where it's about energy usage, I guess. And that healthy diet is in a more challenging place when you look at levels of obesity, you look at the challenges within that. But having said that, if you look at Indonesia, which is a developing country effectively, even though it has a huge population and that growing middle class, they have huge dietary issues as well. Obesity is a problem that they're having over there as well. So there's no country in the world that has the panacea of saying it's all brilliant. Everybody is dealing with issues. And what we're looking to make sure is that we're able to position Ireland and what our food industry can do as part of the solutions in those different countries.
Yeah. I don't know how much time you had to go through the papers today. It looks like it is coming to some class of a showdown on Brexit. That will be hugely significant for you, won't it?
It's been hugely significant for us from the very first day of the vote, Marion, because when you look at your number one market and when you're looking at the food industry, 35% of our exports go to the UK. And lots of people have said over the last 2 years, why are you so dependent on the UK? What have you been doing? Why haven't you been opening markets? But it's logical. You go to the market that speaks the same language as you. You go to the market that is effectively your home market. They have the same labelling. They have the same taste. In that if you go to and I'll just take a very simple example. You go to France. Over there, you don't eat milk chocolate. We eat milk chocolate. The UK eats milk chocolate. They don't eat cheddar cheese. They eat camemberts and soft cheese. Go to the UK, they eat cheddar cheese, we eat cheddar cheese. So it's logical that we will partner with people who eat the same food as we do.
Right.
And because of that, today, 35% of our exports go to the UK. But the day of the Brexit vote, we would have seen a
you
huge...
You woke up the following
morning.
We woke
up, and it's one of those days you know where you were when you woke up.
Where
were
you?
Morning. So we were looking at creating... I was with BIM at that stage, and we were creating a seafood conference the following day. And seafood and Brexit are not good bedfellows either, because obviously access to waters is a huge issue for our fishing industry. And fishing was almost a poster child of the Brexit campaigners over in the UK at that time as well.
Because they kind of said, this is going to...
This is our waters. We'll have all the fish for ourselves and yeah. nobody will ever touch our fish again. Now, clearly that discussion has evolved and it's ongoing. But the day that Brexit challenge happened as well, you moved on a currency. And that was the big news that time, and that really hit the food industry. You moved from a 72p up to 88p in the course of 3 days. And you had your mushroom industry that was hugely hit from that volatility, which meant our products were more expensive overnight going to the UK, or the returns we were getting from them were less if you had priced in,
right.
in sterling, which meant
it went from 70?
72, way up. And we were almost within a fortnight, you were talking about 90. So that's huge issues that we're facing that food industry, which is effectively a low margin business. So we've been living with that scenario and that reality. Today it's, I'd say, 87. So you have moved. Now, that 72 mark was probably a very good day for currency,
yes.
it has to be said.
Yes.
But having said that, you've been living in an 88 environment ever since. So Brexit has hit us for the last 2 years from that perspective, but it's now looking at many more issues. And what we're looking to do, because it's a very divisive and emotive issue everywhere on this one, what we're looking to do is deal in facts, not anecdotes, not feelings, let's deal in facts. And we've now looked at our Brexit barometer, which is out talking facts to companies, and we've run this twice over the last 2 years to really try and find what are the key issues, and most importantly, what are we doing about them, and how do we respond both as a government and as an industry. And what we've looked at is talking to customers. Who is talking to the UK retailers to tell
Are
them
you
about
talking
it?
To the supermarkets over
Absolutely.
There?
And even in March this year, Minister Creed would have led a delegation to meet with the CEOs of the Sainsbury's, the McDonald's, the Ocado's, the Amazon's, the Marks and Spencer's, to make sure they know Ireland is prepping for this. Ireland is not taking the UK for granted. Ireland knows how hard it has to work. But so are our companies. They're talking to them 3-4 times about Brexit to help them know individually they're preparing. Because if you're a supermarket buyer, you need to know you can depend on your supply. We all knew during the snow in March when there was no bread on the shelves.
Yeah.
That's how vulnerable your supply chain is. It's a matter of days. So if you're over in the UK and you're seeing a challenge with Brexit, you need to know your suppliers are prepared.
Right.
Just as importantly, our companies need to be prepared for different scenarios around their own supply chain. In that if you're buying your cardboard or buying an ingredient and it's coming through the UK, what's your plan B if there's a delay?
Yeah.
Do you build your stocks? Do you buy it from somewhere else? Do you route it some other way? And it's not that we're saying there's a right or a wrong, but there's a decision to be made, and knowledge is power.
Right. You were quoted as saying you were talking to Simon Coveney's brother, Patrick. He's the CEO of Greencore.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he was saying?
So he was saying that his biggest worry isn't tariffs. It's actually the delays. Because he works in a just-in-time business. He makes sandwiches for supermarkets in the UK. Well, his majority of his business, obviously it's more expansive than that. But his concern that he shared at the British Irish Chamber of Commerce event was that his real worry is if his tomatoes are delayed coming in from Spain, if his lettuce is delayed, then you can charge whatever you want. If you don't have them, you don't have them. Or if they're coming in and they're not fresh, then your quality of your product is going to be the poorer for it.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, he felt that your products would be less
could
fresh.
Rot.
Less fresh at the very minimum, and could rot at the very worst case scenario, and more expensive because you're putting delays into the scene.
So, how can you circumvent that?
Well, Ireland is in a slightly different position than what Patrick was outlining, because the products that Ireland is dealing with are not in the 3-day, 4-day shelf life world. We're talking about meat, we're talking about dairy products that would have a longer shelf life. But having said that, it's by preparing. So you'd have heard John Jordan from Ornua speaking recently about they're building up stocks in the UK so that they will have, no matter what happens in March, they will have enough butter and cheddar cheese inside in the UK already so that they have a buffer to be able to build it. And that's the kind of scenarios that you're seeing companies
and
do.
And we have specifically constructed cheddar facilities, like factories for cheddar.
Well, when you make cheddar, you make cheddar. It's not a thing that you turn on the machine and you say, what'll I make today? Will it be mozzarella or will it be cheddar or will it be anything else? You build a cheddar factory. And because of Ireland's seasonal dairy production, cheddar is a product that suits us very well rather than soft cheeses, which are don't have as long a shelf life.
Right.
So our peak dairy is in the springtime, where all of our, effectively the majority of our milk, it's a grass-based system. It's what we're world-renowned for. So long-life cheeses suits that production method best. So Ireland has chosen to specialise then in cheddar. And obviously cheddar gives you whey as an off-product as well, which obviously is another valuable ingredient that will go into sports nutrition or all of those other new products. So we have a very... I guess a good formula.
So what will happen? How much of that cheese goes to Britain?
50% of that cheese goes to Britain.
That's a lot of cheese.
That's a lot of cheese. And our beef goes to Britain as well. Half of our beef goes to Britain. And it's not about the fact that it goes to Britain. It's about the fact that there's a high tariff on these products if the UK chooses to implement that route. So if you go down your worst case scenario, and I will stress, because I don't want anybody sitting at the other side drinking their coffee now this morning and saying, oh my God, she's doomsday. This is a worst case scenario. And a worst case scenario would be that WTO tariffs are put on these products and the food we export to the UK are high WTO tariff foods.
Like how much?
50 to 60%.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's those percentages are for everybody. It's not just that they'd pick on Ireland.
Yes.
If you're importing that from anywhere in the world, that's the tariff. And the problem then is, will a consumer just not eat those products if they're that expensive?
And, I mean, there's talk that Britain could go for a cheap food policy. And there's talk of South American beef. I presume that's kind of on your radar as well.
Absolutely. And these are all realities that the UK retailers will have to look at. And I guess what our argument to that, because the UK is not self-sufficient in beef, they need to import. They just don't have enough of it for themselves. So they're going to import it from somebody. And we have been their chosen supplier for the last long time, I guess. And when you buy your food, you have to trust your supply chain.
Yeah.
And you go to different countries around the world where you don't trust the supply chains and you adjust your eating habits as a result of that. In the UK, British consumers trust their supply chain. And if you go into the leading supermarkets or the McDonald's, you will see British and Irish beef. That's how it's labelled to British consumers. We source British and Irish beef. And our research in that market would tell you that normally British consumers view Ireland as local. As shopping local. They don't see it as a
we don't see it as an independent republic.
They see it, thank goodness, as a local product. And we would be delighted with that analogy for them. So can you imagine then, and this is the unknown, you're forecasting in different scenarios, can you imagine that if you trust where you purchase your product from today, you trust the safety, you trust the quality assurance, you trust the traceability, the EU regulations, the every single part of that welfare that the British are very, very exercised about in every category. And then you'd switch that overnight to a product that doesn't have those standards, then you'd want to be a brave retailer, I guess, that would undermine the trust in your supply chain. And
oh, well, now here, you know, there's also the question of cheap food.
Absolutely. And where is that cheap food destined for? And that's the debate that we still don't know, because Britain has that reputation of being a source of cheap food. But then when you look in British supermarkets at the moment, the beef that you can buy and they choose to buy is British and Irish. And they're not the cheapest foods in the world, but they've chosen to date, because of that supply chain, they've chosen to date British and Irish. Now, I don't have the crystal ball. And if I did, I'm sure I'd be off gambling on Wall Street.
Yeah.
But with the crystal ball and the forecasting that we have, we would be meeting those retailers and food service operators to assure them that A, we are prepared, that B, we are producing the beef that their customers want, and dairy, etc., for all of those product categories, and that we are a supply chain that works for them. If it's not broken, you could imagine, then why would you interfere with it?
Well, if it's cheaper, that's why you'd interfere with it.
but will you lose your consumer trust?
Yeah, well, and do you remember, there were always rows about this, of course. There was a scare about frozen burgers a few years ago, and there was another one about chicken. But I mean, chickens are being sold for half nothing. Presumably, if you feed a chicken properly, it's going to be more expensive.
Absolutely. And all of this has layers. Like, as in, if you look at a consumer and you go in today into any supermarket, be it in Ireland, the UK or China, you will be able to have a choice of premium, middle and lower. And you'll make those choices within that. And that will be what a retailer's business is, to offer consumers best trust. But if you look at the data on this, and what we would look at is, if, and it's really interesting, if you look at market shares of retailers, if you look at consumer confidence in retailers, they're linked. So what I would suggest, as and you'd say, of course you would, but what I would suggest to you is, confidence in your supply chain is a key determinant of where you shop.
The other thing I can hear people thinking, like, I gather our tongue, beef tongue, goes to Japan.
Yes, it's a delicacy out there. I was over there last year. And it's a fabulous market. Like, food in Japan, the way they present food, the way they present everything is perfection. It's absolutely beautiful. But they have a restaurant over in Japan that specialised not just in tongue, but in Irish tongue is one of the features that they had in it. And they have it as a delicacy. They cook it in various different ways, in different sauces, different ways of cutting the product from very thinly sliced to chunks. Phenomenal. I'd eaten tongue years ago at home at Christmas time. Mum had prepared it. And, you know, I guess it was an interesting product to have a go off. But to see it there, that almost, it was a restaurant that was almost like, was a trendy steakhouse type restaurant, that the equivalent of, and that you're going in there and nothing else on the menu, only tongue, and which way you want it cooked. Fascinating.
It is indeed. And what about air miles?
What about air miles? Well, I guess when we're looking at it and you're looking at your full food production, air miles is actually a very small part of the contribution of your food product to the environment. Obviously, most of the products that we'd be sending to that side of the world would go by boat rather than by air, although you would have a certain amount of them that would go by air when you've got a short shelf life. And the kind of products that would go by air would be oysters or would be live shellfish. And they would be positioned as a really, really premium product in those markets. But the majority of the product would go by boat.
Right. And where are we selling oysters to?
China. Hong Kong. Like, I was in supermarkets in Shanghai on last Saturday, and you could have Irish oysters. They had a choice between French oysters, Irish oysters and Korean oysters in the supermarket that I was in. The French were ever so slightly more expensive than Ireland, and Ireland then was more expensive than Korea, but all labelled and the story behind each of them for those consumers in Shanghai.
And how long would it take from harvest to the plate over there?
You're talking days, like, as in, obviously it takes a significant investment for the Irish farmer to grow those oysters here in Ireland.
Yeah.
But then you're talking within 10 days of that.
And are they shipped live?
They're shipped live.
All right.
Absolutely, because if they weren't, you'd be sick.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Absolutely. So
there'd be a lot of sickness,
exactly. Actually.
Yeah, it is extraordinary. And, like, I remember at one stage I was working there, I was in China, and explaining to a guide, call him a guide or a reminder, I don't know which, couldn't place where Ireland was. I'd never heard of it. And you'd try things like, you know, James Joyce or Roy Keane or whatever. Nothing. Do they have a clue where Ireland is?
No. Some of them do, but lots of them don't. It's growing. So if I'm looking at the Chinese market at the moment, and if I was to ask any of your listeners today to list for me the top 10 cities in China that have more than 1 million or 10 million people living in them, I'd say beyond Beijing and Shanghai, the conversation would be short. And very similar when you ask the Chinese to list everywhere in Europe, they would possibly draw short fairly quickly. So when we're communicating in China, we bank ourselves in Europe. We're part of the European Union, and we then grow the awareness from there. Riverdance actually is one of the
big
topics
ones.
That
yes,
they
yeah.
look for as well. But they are fascinated, those who know about Ireland, and Ireland would have an increasing profile over there at the moment because of our dairy products. We would supply over 600 million worth of dairy products to the Chinese market. It's our number one export to there from a food perspective. And that presence is growing the awareness. We got access for our Irish beef in April of this year. That's growing presence to it. I don't know if you saw some photos in the Farmers Journal where you actually see Chinese consumers queuing to taste Irish beef at the trade fair that we were at last week. So they're fascinated by it. So when we talked to them about Ireland, and we did a lot of research on this, Marion, and I kind of go back to that first question you asked me about how do we pick our markets. We research them. We actually don't arrive and throw a dart at a map and say, I wonder where I go.
Yeah.
We research not just the macroeconomic detail. We research the consumers. And that's a very unique way of doing things from a Bourbier perspective. We will send our team to go shopping with Chinese consumers, to go cooking with Chinese consumers. We have ethnographic research, which is effectively understanding their behaviours, how they speak to, how they eat, how they cook, everything, so that we can find out what about Ireland will be attractive to them. Because, as you said, it's relatively speaking a blank sheet.
Yeah.
And what we have found with them is, in China particularly, but it's different in every single market, so we research every single market. In when you're talking about China, they don't trust their supply chain. So they don't trust the food systems. They want to know the provenance and they want to know that the food is safe. And we will obviously emphasise the European controls that we have here and then the plus controls that Ireland has as well.
Right.
So we'll have the quality assurance, the Bourbier quality assurance scheme.
And do you eat their food?
I'd eat nearly everything, to be honest with you. But of course, if you're in the market, you're going to eat the food that's presented
to you. Would you eat snake?
If I'm hungry, I will. And we have eaten some unusual food. But again, when we go to these markets, Marion, we present our food. We want them to eat Irish food. So at every reception almost that I'm at in China, I'm putting Irish beef in front of them rather than snakes. I'm putting cheddar cheese in front of them. I'm putting Irish butter, Irish seafood, because we want to show them the repertoire of products that Ireland has. And what we don't want is to change their eating habits. What we want to do is put Irish beef in their eating habits. So you've got in China 8 different regional cuisines, and we're not trying to introduce a Western cuisine to that, but we're trying to introduce Irish beef in those cuisines.
Part
of the magic.
Yeah, if you look at, and you talk about grass-fed, and you look at the production of beef, and you look at the production of milk, and the quotas, after the quotas were lifted, I think we increased the herd by 30%, was it?
We've increased our output by almost 50%, yeah.
Almost 50. If you take that side by side with global warming, and you take two aspects of global warming. One is the animals themselves as polluters, but also we've had fodder problems for the last year, 2 years. Some maybe have to give there.
It's been a challenging 2 years in the food industry, Marion, from a weather perspective, and that's absolute truth, and particularly this year. And every single sector that we've touched in our food industry, and even our horticulture industry as well, was hit by an extraordinary year. So you could, if you reflect back, March, it was snow. We had storms that were bringing down buildings around us. And then we had the hottest summer on record and our grass wasn't able to grow in that. And it's hard to make a generality about a year that has given us
extremes
like that.
Yeah.
But having said that, and going to the point that you're making, it is sustainability is an issue when you're looking at the global food industry. And there's no one going to deny that. We've actually researched this and we've been researching this for the last 8 years. This isn't just because of the fodder crisis. This is because no matter where you go around the world, if the food industry doesn't have a response to sustainability, then it is going to be found wanting. And from a Bourbier perspective, when we looked at this 8 years ago, they were saying to us, you know, you've been talking about being green. Ireland has been talking about being green forever. We've been singing songs about it. We've been writing poems about it. We've been taking pictures of it. But what actually does that mean? And that was, and it was my predecessor would have taken the lead on this, Aidan Cotter, where we created a programme called Origin Green to try and capture and put data behind this. And this is to move, again, from anecdote to science. Because what we're looking to do, and let it be said, Ireland is the only country in the world that is putting in this infrastructure. We've gone and we've built off our quality assurance schemes audits of every single farm in Ireland, because this is complicated stuff, Marion. You know, you've scientists in the United Nations able to give us algorithms, but when you're on a farm, what are you supposed to do about any of that stuff?
Well, so that's the question.
Exactly.
And do you reduce your herd to, I mean, I see one caller in there saying, hi, Marion, can you ask Tara McCarthy, how will Ireland curb CO2 emissions in line with Paris Agreement if the Bord BA strategy is to boost dairy exports, a massive CO2 emitting industry? That came from Thomas.
Yeah, and that's a really valid point. And what we're trying to do is not just irresponsibly grow our dairy exports. What we're trying to do is capture the value of our dairy exports. So this is not a commodity play for Ireland to go out and sell the lowest priced milk in the world. This is for Ireland to be positioned as a premium, traceable,
but
high
quality
product.
The CO2 emissions? It's a big problem.
It absolutely is. And what we're trying to do, I got sidetracked there on our Origin Green programme, is actually support our farmers in the decisions that they're making here. Because if you don't measure, you don't know what matters. And what we're looking at in our Origin Green programme, and this is in partnership with every stakeholder in agriculture. This is not Bord BA doing a solo run by any manner of means. This is working in partnership with Tagisc as farm advisors and as the scientists that give us so much of the data here, working with the Department of Agriculture and all of the schemes that they have. So it isn't that Bord BA is doing its own thing here. It's the industry is working together. And what we're trying to do is not ignore the problem by any manner of means, but actually call out solutions to farmers so that they can make informed decisions. And that means by visiting farmers, comparing to what they were last year versus this year, giving them advice on how they can lower it individually, not at a national basis. This is individual farms, 800 farms every single week being visited by Bord BA, to give them advice on what can happen next and to measure.
And what is the advice?
So that advice will again depend on your performance last year, but it would be looking at how early you put your animals out to grass. It'll be you're looking at your grass utilisation, making sure that you're getting the maximum return for your grass. It's looking at clover in your grass, in your grass as a nitrates substitute for you. It's looking at the calving intervals of your animals to make sure that as your animals are on your farm, they're as productive as possible all of the time.
Anecdote or a fact that seaweed can reduce the CO2 emissions?
It's early stage science in New Zealand. So there was some studies done in New Zealand. It was interesting, but it wasn't scalable what they were doing. But Tagisc is working on every single mitigating opportunity. And they were inside in front of the Joint Directors Committee with my colleague, Michael Maloney, with Brendan Gleeson, the new Secretary General of the department, with Frank O'Mara from Tagisc, actually talking through what Ireland is trying to do, and it's investing in forestry. It's looking at capturing how we can do better. What are the mitigations? But one of the things that I would like to say is that we are starting from, compared to others, a very good place. And I know people will say, but it's getting worse. But Ireland is, and in the last study that was done by Europe, the most efficient dairy producer in Europe. So
but
you have to look at that.
A person wearing a different hat coming in here will say, we're going to miss our targets of what we're committed to in terms of reduction of CO2 emissions.
Absolutely. And that's why the programmes like Origin Green are so essential, because when you're dealing with this on a national level, you won't make a difference unless you're talking to the individuals.
OK, another caller. Is Tara concerned about the rising popularity of veganism? Our former president was talking about it recently.
Yeah, we've been looking at it to try and understand what this evolution is and what are the motivators behind it. And it's actually, you know, when you look at veganism, it's been around forever, to be honest with you, as has vegetarianism, as have lots of different diets. So it's not a case of, oh, I'm very worried about anything. These are different trends happen in diets, and sometimes it goes in and out of fashion, and sometimes it's a fundamental shift. But I guess what we're trying to understand is the motivation behind it. And what we're finding from that motivation is that for young people, younger people will view this as a health movement, and then other people will do it for ethical reasons, and then others will do it because it's trendy, etc., etc.
I would think ethics is probably the strongest one.
Not really, no. That it depends on who you are. Older the older the population, its ethics, and the younger the population, its health. That's what the data is showing us at the moment anyway. But it's a very, very small percentage. It's less than 5% of our population is doing it. But you are seeing a lot of new products coming on the market. And that's one of the drivers.
You heard Mary Robinson saying, you know,
I did,
easy on the beef, easy on the meat, and that she has nearly become either vegetarian or vegan. Because of the impact on the planet.
And people are going to make personal choices on this. And I do think that we are seeing a trend towards eating better beef and possibly less, but better quality beef rather than gorging every single day. And there is a responsibility about how much you eat of any single product. But the challenge in veganism that we've seen, and this is again coming from our consumer research, is it's tough to be a vegan from the taste perspective, from the health implications that sometimes you're looking at. How do you make sure you're getting all of the vitamins and minerals, etc., the cost of it, and the convenience? As in, one of the other big drivers in food is consumers want convenience, and it's not all, although it is becoming more convenient because you have more products out there, it's a challenge to deliver against veganism.
That we were all reared to believe that France was the centre of the food world, and you married a French man.
I did.
And you met him through food?
Well, I don't know, that's probably a romantic version of it. So my husband Didier is French, and I met him when I was in Paris visiting a very good friend of mine, Monica, over in that city. And one of my trademarks is that if we're going to have a party, it should have Irish food in it. So my job coming in from Dublin was to make sure we had genuine Irish smoked salmon and genuine Irish cream. Because one of the challenges that we always found, and I lived in Paris for 5 years, was you couldn't get good cream. You got the stuff in a can, which was an insult to anybody, I felt anyway. So it was over the preparation of an Irish coffee that, as I whipped the cream and was delegating to all to do it, that I met and fell for my Frenchman.
Right. And I was going to say you're full time in Ireland now, but it seems to me you're on the trot all the time.
Yeah, it's a fascinating job in Bord Bia. We've done, since I got the role now, January, 12 months, we've done 7 different trade missions around the world. And it's been, every day has been a learning day. We go to, the organisation goes to, I don't go to 30 different trade shows around the world, but I get to get to see many of them. So it is, it's an exciting job to be in, because you're seeing different food cultures, you're visiting different supermarkets. And Marion, I don't know about you, but I always find that you get a feeling for a country when you're in their supermarkets, when you see how they react to food, when you see how they shop food. And being in places like Shanghai last week, or being in Jakarta and Kuala Lumpur the week before, is just a fascinating way to spend your time.
It certainly is. Now, another caller is on. The core problem with the food and agri sector is that the margin is too low and food is too cheap. The middleman, and or woman, I presume, is taking too much, regardless of the kind of year the primary producers have gone through, killing the golden goose.
I'd fundamentally agree. One of our absolute missions and what we're really focused on is trying to capture value. And I've mentioned that already. This is not about Ireland being the biggest at anything. This is about Ireland positioning premium products. And really what Bord Bia is looking to do is capture that value for our farmers and our producers, because they work very, very hard to get that product on shelves. We have a premium product, and we at no stage want to sell that for too cheap or in any way. So, and it's programmes like Origin Green actually capture and bring to life overseas what our farmers are doing. They are the star and the hero of it, and really what we are trying to do all of the time.
Is that person right about the margins?
The margins are thin for everybody in the food industry, both processors and producers. But what we're trying to do all of the time is position Ireland as premium, and that insisting that that source has to be sourced always from Ireland. And it's that traceability programmes, those grass-fed initiatives, those Origin Green programmes look to differentiate Ireland from any other country to allow us to do that.
Another caller. In terms of Origin Green, should we insist on being pesticide-free?
No, I don't think you can, because what you're looking at is the efficiency of the products. Now, obviously, it's being used, all pesticides, to be used under supervision or to be used in moderation, because you don't want to have any dangers of your industry. But we wouldn't look to demand that at the present. But I wouldn't say that I'm an expert on growing and the use of pesticides. I'm looking at the what the consumer is saying back to us is how we're translating it. And whilst you're seeing that consumers are looking for clean foods, they're looking for natural foods.
Organic food?
Organic is growing, but it's quite niche. And there's a growing movement in organic. Some countries have a very vibrant organic industry. And in Ireland, we have a growing industry, and we have some sectors that are powerfully brilliant at organics. Our salmon industry is 90% organic. We had the Organic Awards just 2 weeks ago, where you have some really brilliant organic products out there.
How is the salmon organic?
When you're looking at our farmed salmon in Ireland, 90% of what Ireland produces is organic.
How could that be if it's...
Organic feed. So the feed that they would have is organic.
Yeah, but it's not a natural product in the sense of... Well, it's not like the brothorn going up the hour.
Well, it's not wild, but yes. It's natural.
Yeah. Well, God, language... How about misleading people? Do you think you're going to get a deal? Are you talking to your British counterpart at all?
Well, funny that you say that. There is no British counterpart of Bord Bia. And this is one of the challenges that they face, because they are not, they haven't invested in the infrastructure of selling their food internationally. They have looked to create Great Britain food agency, but they haven't put investment or they haven't put an infrastructure behind that. So Bord Bia is quite unique. But having said that, we are talking to all of the different agencies that exist over in the UK. We're finding that the level of preparation there is less than it has been in Ireland, that the proactivity from both our department and Foreign Affairs has been quite exceptional compared to what we're seeing in the UK.
And what if they go by British?
Many of them have. And this is a concern for us, because consumer demand isn't asking for that, but politics is driving that. So you'll see some of the retailers that will have a British-only policy on meat, a British-only policy on dairy. And without a doubt, Marion, that is a very damaging profile for us as the companies that are going into that.
And yet, very understandable. I mean, we say buy Irish if you can.
Absolutely.
In everything.
But we're a country that is 800% self-sufficient. They're a country that's in deficit.
Right.
So there's a logic behind us saying it. There's perhaps less of a logic when you don't have enough to do it.
You're a queer one with the words. Wild salmon. What did you describe the salmon as?
Salmon is a natural product. If it's a farm, it's a farmed salmon. So you're looking at farmed salmon. And I worked with BIM in the seafood industry and would have strong views on this as well. And I know others have strong views that would may not agree with me. But farmed salmon is a very natural product. It would be the same as saying that farmed cattle aren't a natural product. You know, so why was something farmed not natural? And when it's being farmed and fed on organic products, you know, I do think there's a debate to be had on that one.
There sure is. There sure is. It's a debate that's had up and down the coast all the time, in a way. Apart from what in selling, you're looking at trends and fads. And I gather butter is back.
Butter is huge, yeah. And actually, if you looked at our figures last year and the growth behind the food industry, so we're an industry that's now worth 12.6 billion euro. It's the largest, we're the largest indigenous industry that Ireland has. And that figure grew last year. That figure grew by about 13% last year. And the big driver behind that was our dairy. And the big driver behind that was the price of butter. So there was butter has been reclassified, I guess, by both consumers and in some cases dietitians as a really healthy product. It's good fat. So from that perspective, I guess I've always been a butter lover. So it's been great. But watching consumer trends is a fascinating piece. We invest significantly in consumer trends, Marion. We issued three weeks ago at CIAL, our consumer lifestyle trend study. We do this every 2 to 3 years, spotting around the world. We spoke to over 32,000 consumers to gather this data. and finding how are they engaging with food and what are they seeing as the future in it. And it's giving you some huge insights as to new product development and trends we should watch. From health is absolutely a solid, but then you're looking at people's relationship with each other and the experiences they expect, and then what restaurants and food do to deliver that. You're seeing the role of technology and how communities are formed or not formed as a result of technology. And all of this has a consequence on how and where you buy your food. So whether you're a retailer and you're looking at online, I was in a supermarket, as I said, in Shanghai last Friday. And they had a deal that you could buy your product online and it would be delivered to your home within 30 minutes.
Wow.
That's serious.
That's the way things are going. Anyway, listen, clearly a woman who loves her job, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that you won't have to deal with a calamitous Brexit. There's an Eva's will. But Tara McCarthy, in the meantime, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.